Our reading this morning comes from Paul Tillich, one of the most influential German-American Christian existentialist philosophers. I am sure all of you are waiting with bated breath. Paul Tillich had probably one of the most profound impacts on liberal theology in the 20th century out of any one person. He influenced a generation of Unitarians and Universalists with his thoughts about doubt, faith, and courage. And so today we take just a sample of his work. Tillich writes, "An act of faith is an act of a finite being who is grasped by and turned to the infinite. It is a finite act with all the limitations of a finite act. And it is an act in which the infinite participates beyond the limitations of the finite act. Faith is certain insofar as it is an experience of the holy, but faith is uncertain insofar as the infinite to which it is related is received by a finite being. This element of uncertainty in faith cannot be removed, it must be accepted. And the element in faith which accepts this is courage. Faith includes an element of immediate awareness which gives certainty and an element of uncertainty. To accept this is courage. In the courageous standing of uncertainty, faith shows most visibly its dynamic character." And now, Gretchen will explain what that means.
We'll get there. The first time I met the man that many had told me could fund a full-time minister in the church that I was then serving, if he liked the minister enough, he hadn't even asked my name or told me his when he leaned in to ask me, "Are you a believer?" It was a trick question, I knew, or rather it wasn't, and that was the trick. See, he was looking for a specific answer, obviously an acceptable orthodoxy of the Unitarian kind. And then I would pass the test, I suppose, you know, and they would get the full-time minister funded in their church. I knew what he wanted me to say, knew he wanted me to put myself in one category or another, affirm my fitness for the congregation in doing so, at least according to him. Maybe even my fitness for Unitarian Universalist ministry entirely. "Are you a believer?" I paused for a small moment, contemplating how much easier it would be if I just gave him that simple no that he was clearly looking for. But it turns out I'm not often lured in by something being easy. And so instead, I responded, "What do you mean?" "Believer," he said. "Are you a believer?" "I'm not sure what you mean," I said. "I do believe in many things." He became obviously impatient with me at this point. "I mean, are you a deist?" Showing some restraint, I did not ask if he meant I was a time traveler from the 18th century, who believed in a cold and distant supreme being, deism. Instead, I shrugged, "I'm not sure why that matters," and I walked away. Obviously, I did not pass the test. And they did not end up with a full-time ministry position funded that year. And thus ends the story of what brought me to Foothills. Just kidding. Mostly. Asking about belief is not the same, regardless of what that man or others might think, that it's not the same as asking about one's faith. Belief indicates a sense of certainty, like he was asking me to say for sure where I came down. Did I believe? Lately, I confess I have been longing for this sort of certainty. Something to hang on to that would be clear and solid and concrete. To have a list of answers and know what's right and what's wrong. A book I could just open up and it would all be there, black and white definitives for what to do, what part to play, how to react, and why. And as long as we're at it, I wouldn't mind a feeling of confidence that there is a God, still not the deist version, mind you, but one that would be watching over us and would never give us more than we could handle, and is also totally taking care of climate change in ways we can't see or totally understand. Wouldn't mind. I mean, heck, these days, I even take being in the 77% of adults who believe in angels, or as the study puts it, believe that ethereal beings are real. By the way, just as a side note, the percentage of people who believe that there are human reasons for climate change, 70%. Ethereal beings, real, 77%. Fascinating. But anyway, I wouldn't mind being in the 77%, because clearly we could use all the help we can get. But to answer the question that man asked me a number of years ago in a more direct way that he was looking for, no, I'm not so good at belief like that. More often, I'm not a believer. I'm a doubter, constantly navigating waves of uncertainty, confusion, and complexity. Like Fox Mulder, I want to believe. But more often than not, I'm much more like Scully, skeptically squinting. I'm not convinced. Luckily, I find myself in good company. We Unitarian Universalists are not historically known for our belief. Many of us have what the Reverend Christine Robinson calls a wintry faith, where we live much more in this realm of doubt than in confident clarity. This is somewhat ironic given that our denominational designation, you know, that 10-syllable, sometimes source of confusion to newcomers and media alike, Unitarian Universalist. This indicates a belief statement, actually, as in Unitarian, an affirmation of the oneness of God, or originally anti-Trinitarian. And Universalist, an affirmation of our theological conviction that ultimately all people are saved, healed, and loved, no exceptions. Despite our name, however, our tradition has had a pretty complicated relationship with belief. I'd say for two main reasons. First, because both of those founding theological claims were in reaction to the orthodoxy of the time, which meant that the seeds of our religion were sown in the context of stating what we didn't believe rather than what we did. So that here we are hundreds of years later, and still sometimes we struggle to articulate a positive affirmation and construction of what it is we do believe, whether individually or those things commonly believed among us. But secondly, and more importantly, our relationship with the idea of belief is clouded by the fact that all along, even in the times when our churches had creeds, which sometimes they have, there has always been a clause somewhere in the church bylaws or some other place that said that ultimately all members were encouraged to follow their conscience, and that we need not think alike to love alike. Which means, based on the fact that there is no helpful way to require someone to believe what their heart could not believe. And so therefore, membership in one of our churches could not be predicated on an assent to a list of beliefs. This clause is what was known as the Liberty Clause. In our covenantal tradition, belief has never been understood as the critical binding element. Instead, our religious practice has been oriented towards faith as something much riskier, less controllable, and more dynamic than belief as static, fixed, and certain. Something grounded in our actual experiences of being human, being alive and breathing and changing, and then what we discover as we come into relationship with others who are alive and breathing and changing. Writer Sharon Salzberg, who was raised Jewish and is now practicing Buddhist, she captures our idea of faith very well when she says, "Faith, in contrast to belief, is not a definition of reality, not a received answer, but an active, open state that makes us willing to explore. While beliefs come to us from the outside, from another person or tradition or heritage, faith comes to us from within, from our alive participation in the process of discovery." As the 19th century German theologian Friedrich Schleiermacher would have it, faith is a feeling we each have, an experience of absolute dependence, by which he means an experience of life, of being, an awareness of everything, and then our place in all of that, which is to say, the ways that we have not that much control over any of the rest of it, past, present, future, and then a surrender into this experience. This feeling of absolute dependence is what Tillich means when he talks about the certainty of faith, which is because, he says, I'm going to read it again, the feeling itself is the certainty. Let me read it. He says, an act of faith is an act of a finite being, that's us, who is grasped by and turned to the infinite. That's the feeling of utter dependence, the sense of being a part of the cosmos. That feeling, however, is prelingual, as in it's the feeling itself. That's the certainty. Where you run into the uncertainty is when you come to the words to describe it, or attempts to attach any meaning or ascribe those beliefs to that experience. As he says, it is a finite act with the limitations of a finite act. Our words are limited. We cannot possibly capture the experience that we've had of utter dependence. And it is an act in which the infinite participates beyond the limitations of a finite act. You got a sense out there of something greater. Faith is certain insofar as it is an experience of the holy. Experience something greater. Beauty. Mystery. But faith is uncertain insofar as the infinite to which it is related is received by a finite being. This element of uncertainty in faith cannot be removed, he says. It must be accepted. And the element in faith which accepts this is courage. I'm going to come back to that in a minute. Those words that attempt to describe this experience, all of these are inevitably inadequate approximations at attempting to capture what is truly unexplainable. And that, again, that's the uncertainty. My colleague, the Reverend Jan Christian, who serves as our Unitarian Universalist Pacific Western, serves in the Unitarian Universalist Pacific Western region, she tells a story about when she was 10, and she was out on a lake, Lake Mead. Maybe some of you have been there. She was with her family. She was out in the middle of the lake when her dad stopped the boat and asked Jan if she'd like to swim. She looked out in the water, unsure. "How deep is it here?" she asked. Oh, about 500 feet, he said. She was alarmed. I can't swim in water that deep. You swim in the deep end of the pool. Your feet don't touch there, and they don't touch here, her dad responded quite reasonably. But here, she said, I can't see the bottom. Faith is the leap into those deep waters where we cannot see the bottom. The willingness to trust and relax and to swim in the same ways that we would have if we could see, if we did know exactly what is there, and then to live with the unknowing. Unlike belief, faith does not try to resolve that unresolvable tension of existence or attempt to make solid what is always dynamic and mysterious, changing, sometimes scary, even terrible. Instead, it incorporates into itself our inevitable doubt, that uncertainty, acknowledging all that we cannot see, all that we don't know, all the ways we could be wrong, and how little control we have over any of it. It takes all of this in and says, okay, yep, that's how it is. Let's get on with the living anyway. Now, this understanding of faith helps differentiate it from hope, as hope is not so detached as all of this. Hope is actually very oriented towards specific outcomes. Right? You can imagine, we hope this will be true. We hope this will happen. There's something very specific there. In the quote on your order of service on the front, it's from Vaclav Havel. He offers a definition of hope. But it seems to me what he's getting at there is actually a vision of what it means to release hope. To let it go, and instead move into a steadfastness of living and loving, a loyalty to values and vision regardless of how things will turn out. I call this not hope, but faith. And as Tillich asserts, its practice does require courage, particularly as the waters and the waves around us grow more active. See, I've never been to Lake Mead, but I've been to other lakes that I assume are similar. And in most cases, the water, it's relatively calm. And especially, I mean, even if it's windy or the lake is particularly crowded with lots of motorboats out there and there's lots of bumpy waves, there's still no undertow, right? And even if the waves are especially big, if you have a life jacket on and you know how to swim, you should be fine. You can trust that the water will hold you. But this is actually not when faith is most needed, which is to say, faith is not only about leaping into the calm waters where you can't see the bottom. Just as often it is the practice of diving into the open sea, where surrender to the waves might not just take you under, but take us all under. So what does faith mean in times such as this? Times like these. The temptation in these moments of life's greatest uncertainty, as I confessed earlier about my own longings for greater, solid, stable answers, is to lean into our own versions of faith as belief, and then to strengthen these beliefs into certainty, squelching doubt within or around, hoping our sense of the truth might offer us a source of stability in the turmoil, so that we are drawn to assert not necessarily the existence of angels, but to harden into whatever our beliefs are, even if they are unbeliefs, to lock into a story about what is happening to us, around us, in our world, and who's to blame, to harden the categories between those of us who believe as we do, and those who do not, to turn to our neighbors and ask, are you a believer? And then to use that answer as a kind of test, to know if they're a person that we could know or love. Sharon Salzberg acknowledges that beliefs can provide a thread of continuity and perspective as we undergo the tumultuous changes and storms of everyday life. It's not the existence of beliefs that's the problem. But she says, what happens to us when we hold those beliefs rigidly? When we presume the absolute centrality of our views, and those who don't share our views must remain the other, because we don't really need to listen to them. Our story becomes the story. Even we who, at least in theory, appreciate a diversity of views and who honor the many and sometimes contradictory pieces of truth we all hold as valid, we too can be drawn into what philosopher Richard Bernstein called Cartesian anxiety, wherein, ever since Descartes, humans have been longing to claim a degree of ontological certainty. Right? We'd sure like a singular and unchanging narrative that could explain our lives and life itself. Mostly, our community, we tend to do this through the use of science. If we could just figure out the answer, go through the scientific method, there is clearly a singular, unchanging narrative that could explain our lives and life itself. But also, you might do the same thing through scripture, even politics, or maybe today political parties and their rhetoric. Unfortunately, or fortunately, ontological certainty, however, would be what some today might call an alternative fact. Because again, the element of uncertainty in faith cannot be removed. It must be accepted. Because we are finite, and we're trying to engage with an experience that is infinite. There's no getting around it. There's no way to know for certain what it all means, what's going to happen, how to make things better, just as there's no way to reconcile that finite experience of certainty, that experience of being here now with that infinite reality. So instead of growing our orientation to belief in these times instead invite us to take that courageous leap into faith. A faith that, as Paul Tillich says, understands doubt not as its opposite, but as its elemental partner. Last week I spoke about the practice of courage and courageous love as taking an action out of a sense of duty, and then that duty being connected to a vision of agape love. Tillich defines courage as the daring self-affirmation of one's own being in spite of the powers of non-being, which are the heritage of everything finite. To translate this a bit, he's saying courage is the act of continuing to live as if your life matters in a truly ultimate sense, even in the face of fear and risk and the realities of this ocean and its mad waves and the undertow, even in the presence of doubt. Courage, he says, is an essential aspect of faith because it is always a risk to live with your eyes open like this, that willing awareness of all we cannot know, to take doubt into oneself and yet persist in love nonetheless. Faith is that capacity to remain unresolved, to love the questions, as Rilke would have it, yet still remain confident, to acknowledge the mystery, the confusion, the pain even at the center of life, and to love courageously anyway. Margaret Wheatley reminds us that both Moses and Abraham were charged with great tasks, big, important tasks. It was their whole life's work, and yet at a certain point they had to abandon hope that they would ever complete the tasks in their lifetime. But they still had to persist. So they had to persist, not from certainty or even optimism, but from faith. That is, from a relationship to a vision that was beyond their full comprehension, to acknowledge the ways they could not know, yet continue on. courageous love calls to us with this sort of vision. Acknowledging that though so much remains out of our view and beyond our knowing, together we can hold faith that this love might still lead us on. May it be so, and amen.